Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
All right, there's a few places we could start, Brandon, but I want to start with what we just watched, which was the Bianca Belair run-in as Io Sky and Bayley were double-teaming Charlotte after the match. And I want to frame it in the context of the ring introductions, and this has been something I'm noticing, that Charlotte's not, like, really popular, and she's not really hated. She's recognized as a star, but during ring introductions, wasn't a lot of reaction to her. And when Bianca Belair ran out, I think people are excited to see her, but I don't think it's like this great way to come back, which is, oh, she saved Charlotte from this terrible beatdown. And I just kind of get the sense WWE is sort of plugging people into spots who have some, you know, reputation with fans as stars, but I don't sense there's like a ton of passion pro or con with anyone, because Io Sky is the heel, but I think fans kind of like her. They think she's good and seems nice, even if she hangs out with some, you know, not so nice people. And then Charlotte's sort of the star, and, well, I want to see her. I feel like I'm seeing a star when I see her, but I don't have strong emotions. Will Belair add a spark, or will she be pulled down? And feel free to disagree with my premise, too, if you'd like.
I don't disagree. I mean, I wish I could, but I think that it's been par for the course with the women's division on SmackDown for a bit of time now. I think since they moved the title over to Io Sky, it's been hard to establish her, to make her feel like she isn't a secondary champion in some way. I mean, I had this conversation with Nate Lindberg when he filled in as host for Wrestling Night in America a couple of weeks ago after the most recent Premium Live event, Fastlane. And we were talking about how, you know, there's such a disparagement between Roman Reigns and the Undisputed Universal title versus Seth Rollins and his Universal Championship, where one feels a bit like a consolation prize. And the women's championships are a little bit different in that both of those titles have, you know, some significant lineage and I think prestige behind them. But the way that they've been presented in the last couple of months or so, they couldn't feel like further, on further ends of the spectrum. On one end, on Raw, you have Rhea Ripley with the World Women's title in significant segments. I mean, she is a focal point, a highlight of Raw. She is one of the biggest stars on that show. And over on SmackDown, Io has very much felt like she's played second fiddle to not only other women in the division like Charlotte Flair, but also to members of her own faction. I mean, Bayley is certainly getting, I think, as much, if not more, focus than Io. And you know, Dakota Kai is you know, a step below her, but still, the focus has much more been on damage control and what they are willing to do to aid Io in retaining the championship. So I think that it's sort of a microcosm for the way that the division has been handled as a whole right now. I think that You're absolutely right. Charlotte is in a position where fans are excited to see her. They acknowledge her as a legacy big star, but it feels like she's miscast. I don't think that the crowd has ever really been able to connect with her long term at a significant level as a babyface. And it feels like she's kind of just going through the motions right now. The feud with Io and with Damage Control in large part has just felt derivative. It hasn't felt like it carries any weight or any significance. And I also felt like the reaction for Bianca's return tonight felt really muted. Because again, I just don't get the sense that there's a whole lot of interest in seeing her make the save for Charlotte Flair.
At what point can you track backwards that they could have gone a different direction? Does anything jump out? I mean, I shouldn't put you on the spot, but does something jump out where it's like, hey, had they done this with Damage Control and this with Charlotte and this with Belair, we'd be sitting here on October 20th saying, hey, they're utilizing these wrestlers in a way that is competing with how Raw is dealing with their women's division.
Well, I think that the way that they've handled and booked Io since she won the championship has sent a pretty clear message to the fans that she is subsidiary to these other women. I mean, they could have put her in a position to look like a strong champion coming out of her Money in the Bank cash in and title win. And instead, they've booked her into matches where she has the opportunity to come out looking like an equal player on the same level as, say, Charlotte Flair and Asuka. And instead, what they've done is give her sort of the vocal indication that that is her goal. So they've had her on multiple occasions swear off the help of Damage Control and say that she wants to do this on her own, be a fighting champion, prove that she deserves it. In fact, commentary even made a reference to it back at Fastlane when I think it was Michael Cole said that this was the biggest match and night of her career because there were women in the back who were doubting whether or not she could do this. And they made it a focal point to say that Io wanted Bayley and Dakota to stay in the back so that she could handle this on her own. But when push came to shove, Bayley got involved, and Io reluctantly accepted the help, realizing that had she not, she would have lost her championship. And they did the same thing tonight. So they're sending this message that Io is a reluctant competitor, a reluctant participant in the cheating, but acknowledging that she wouldn't be champion if not for it. And so I think they're defining her down from the jump. And so, I mean, if you could turn back the clock a little bit, I think that it would be beneficial to go in a different direction with Io altogether, either to have already removed her from Damage Control, to allow her to stand on her own two feet and look like someone who can stand up to these women on her own, or be interplaying two storylines, be of two minds, so that on one end, Bayley and Dakota are trying to get involved in her matches, and maybe they are. Maybe they are still helping her, but Io is vocal in her discontent with their participation.
Where is the best direction for the kind of the four key players in this segment? If you're saying, all right, we are where we are now, is there a way that you think they can fix this? Can they fix Charlotte, Bayley, Io Sky, and Bianca Belair starting now? Let's kind of just go, we're going to accept that the path we've taken and some of the issues that you just brought up are present. Is there a way to get crowds reacting enthusiastically to something in the women's division like they are to things in the men's division on SmackDown right now?
Well, I think you could still pick up that thread with EO, because I think they've done enough where they've showed her enough times intimating that she would like to stand on her own two feet and do it without the help of Damage Control. I think that there could be a growing gloating from Bayley discussing or hyping up her participation in EO's victories. And EO could push back on that and you know, swear off Bayley in future title defenses and then successfully win without her help, so that you build to that struggle, that internal conflict within Damage Control. That's one way I could see them working, you know, working EO and continuing to build her up as a singles competitor rather than relying so heavily on Dakota and Bayley. For Charlotte, I just don't know that short of finding a heel that the crowd is deeply invested in on a serious level. Now, Bayley gets heat, but deep down, I don't think the crowd really dislikes Bayley. I think they know that she's playing a character, and while she's good at getting heat, I think that over the course of the last year or so, she's been defined down in a way that doesn't make her a particularly compelling heel opponent for Charlotte. Not to mention, we've seen that feud, you know, done many, many times. So I don't think that is the answer. I guess, man, as with Flair in this babyface role, there isn't anyone on the roster right now, save maybe like Nia Jax, who I think Flair could elicit a purely full-throated, you know, a pure full-throated babyface reaction against. I think virtually anyone else on the roster, you're talking about this same muted, yeah, she's a star, it's cool to see her, but we're not really into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Belair, right. I mean, and Belair, yeah. I think Belair will be fine as long as you, well, I don't know. I mean, would you want to have Belair and Io just have a really killer match? I mean, could that help?
I don't think Belair wants to be a heel with her husband, and I'm sorry, Bianca wants to be a heel with her husband in the Lashley thing. But to me, like from an interest level, I'd like to see her go back to the persona she had in NXT. Io Sky, I think, is a more natural babyface fighting that. Charlotte's better as a heel. She wants to be a heel, but when WWE thinks, well, she gets cheered, whatever we do, well, they've solved that somehow by not putting her in a situation where, and you know, there's a lot of passion about what she's doing. And Bayley, you know, I think Bayley's going to be an agitating role player until she becomes and I don't think she's there yet, but I think you're touching on what is sort of baked into how fans look at her, which is eventually they just want her to be the woman who's been around a long time, done a lot of things, good and bad, but fans ultimately like her and want her to be this veteran presence, using her wit against snotty up-and-coming heels. Mm-hmm. And we're just not there yet. We don't have that cast ready. The SmackDown depth chart isn't there, but you can see it. I mean, Bayley is a babyface taking on, you know, Chelsea Green or in a tag team.
Sure.
A babyface team, you know, going after Piper Niven and Chelsea or something like that. You can imagine maybe something like that fans would get behind her. But I don't know that we're there yet. I think we're just sort of not in a holding pattern, but in this weird space where she's just in between being the elder statesman of the division who fans are given permission to cheer. So that's my short answer to all of it. I think Charlotte should be a heel, and they should just have her be against opponents who fans like, so fans will actually boo Charlotte, and flip around everybody else. So, but I don't know how long that will take to get there.
And Bayley too, with her, I think like they've been searching for something with her since they lost Sasha Banks. I mean, I think that Bayley's best era as a heel, undoubtedly, it was during the pandemic, playing off of Sasha. I mean, those two were really, really good together, and I don't think that they've at any point even sniffed the level of magic that they had.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, the match itself, I mean, I mentioned this to you in our brief production meeting before we went live. It seemed like a show that was as phoned in or going through the motions for a SmackDown as I've seen in a while, but it wasn't like frustrating or infuriating or bad. It just was like, we know what we're doing, and we're going to show up and do it. And we've got John Cena, and we got Logan Paul, and we got a Bella run in at the end. So people who watch will feel like they saw some star power outside of a normal, solid cast. And they saw some good wrestling, some good talking, Paul Heyman cutting a lengthy promo, happy moment with LA Knight coming out and getting in his face, and Heyman selling for him. Like, they checked a lot of boxes. But it's also, you know, I mean, other than the run-in with Belair at the end, and unless you're really into John Cena, which, you know, right now he's pretty irritating. We'll get into that, to me at least. And although universally cheered, but as irritating as ever. Or you just kind of think, oh, Logan Paul's a star. I want to see him. I mean, I get why they would look at this and go, yeah, we got a solid show. But from Forwarding News, I mean, okay, contract signing next week on FS1. Belair's back. I don't know. It felt like, yeah, to me, this wasn't a blockbuster show where if you missed it, you're going to be like, ah, I should have tuned in. I don't think there's going to be a buzz about it. And part of that was just dedicating, you know, three segments, a two commercial break length match to a women's title match that was frankly sold because it's a women's title match and Charlotte's in it. And Io Sky's a champion and Charlotte walks around like she should be champion and that's her rightful place. And those are fine talking points, but the ring introductions, I think, told the story, which is Charlotte and yay, boo, but nothing passionate. I'm like, ah, this isn't a match that's going to just, you know, end the show with people energized about WWE. The Bel Air run-in, like, you know, did change things somewhat. I'm like, okay, at least they had that in mind, and that's why this went last. But I don't know. I mean, do you disagree with that kind of framing of the show in any way? Do you think I'm being unfair or too soft on it?
No. I think it's pretty dead on. It didn't feel like I was watching a show that had no momentum. Like it was clearly a product that has been, on a run. On a solid, impressive run. It wasn't completely phoned in to the extent that it had no bearing on future weeks, but it also didn't feel particularly consequential either. And I think you could say the same thing. Like that's how I felt about Fastlane a couple weeks ago. I mean, it was a fine show. It was an enjoyable 3 or so hours, but it was relatively inconsequential.
All right, well, there is more to talk about. We had John Cena teasing a retirement inspired by Sting or something, who knows. We'll get into that. We'll get into Logan Paul and much more with callers and emails and more of our conversation from us. So let's just pause quickly, introduce the show, and then get on with other topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering SmackDown on Friday, October 20th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, and a bunch of podcasts. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app to subscribe to our Red Logo show. This one, our post shows, covering Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. Plus the Blue Logo show with our weekly flagship best of shows, some cool interviews. We got like a tour interview with Matt Morgan going up soon this weekend with some backstage stories from WWE and more from him. So hit refresh to check that out. And more. While you're at it, search PW Torch to subscribe to our free PW Torch daily cast lineup with a new show every day of the week with different hosts and different themes. The other voice you hear on this show tonight is Brandon LeClaire, a PW Torch contributor. He covers pay-per-views on pwtorch.com with written reports and also joined Greg Parks after them and has been contributing in many ways for years, including covering SmackDown itself. Brandon, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's give out the phone number and email, and then we'll get to our first calls. The number to call if you are live streaming the show and want to participate in this discussion, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the women's division. The number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, that flags you on our switchboard so we know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's begin with, I believe, Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
So just going back to your discussion about how Io's being framed as champion lately compared to like Rhea, or I guess, and also Becky, is very different. From just the way – I just think the women's division in general as a whole on Santos is kind of lackluster because it's only focusing on either damage control or a combination of Charlotte or Bianca or even Asuka, and that's kind of it. And it's kind of like that's – just five of us feels like there's not enough depth and not enough intrigue than it is on Raw right now because coming off of Raw, you had Becky and Jay, Becky and Rhea and her interactions with Shayna and all them, right? And then you look at SmackDown, like, okay, it was just there. I was like, yo, I was watching SmackDown, like, it happened type of thing. Was it bad? But it was just there. So I think they kind of need to do to change, I guess, EO's title run or something. It's just like you said, it's kind of a break away from damage control to be separated because the group never worked in the begin with, and then with Io as champ, I thought it would be different. I thought they would see some more between herself and Bayley, but clearly they're dragging that out more. So I don't know if is it Io's title run, or is it just because there's not enough women for her to be in the ring with? They're just facing the same multiple people right now compared to what happened on Raw with Rhea and Becky on them. So what do you think about this lack of women for EO and Charlotte and Bianca just rotating faces each other over again for the last few weeks?
I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, the conundrum for WWE is always they've got their top female stars, and they have sort of a side, you know, one or two sidebar undercurrent things going on each of the shows, but they don't consistently rotate new people in, or when they try, they don't always stick. You know, I mean, there seemed like Paula Beckinsale and Shotzi, but it just didn't stick. You know, we can come up with other examples where that happens. And so you end up with like this sort of just rotation of the same people facing each other for, I think, longer than it's healthy. I think they apply that to the men's division, and it's okay. They get away with it because they have five or six major men's feuds going on at a time. But with the women, they have like one major feud and then one secondary feud. And so it feels more repetitious because if you're into the women's division, there's fewer of them. And then when it's time to rotate the men's feuds, they can. When it's time to rotate the women's feuds, that secondary feud didn't result in somebody being ready to be fresh in the main event again. And the people who are at the top of the women's division, they don't like rotating down because it feels like they're defining them down, but there's not another big star for them to go face. They face that with Becky on Raw, and now they're doing, you know, they did the kind of the sidebar feud with Trish. It's a special attraction feud. And now it's, NXT. So they're keeping her busy in sort of this creative way with a legend and now with the third brand, so to speak. SmackDown doesn't have that. And so, you know, it shows up in different ways with different women, but Io Sky, as Kyle's bringing up specifically, Brandon, is an example of somebody who would benefit from, hey, had a feud with somebody for 2 months, boom, won it, lost it, whatever, moved on to the next person, and there's three other people you're intrigued with who have been winning or losing, but they've been on a journey, and you want to see Io Sky battle that person. That's how the men's booking works. With the women, it can't work the same way, but they sort of book it the same way, and then it feels repetitive or stale. Raw's getting away with it more because I think they just have better storylines and hotter characters through a mix of happenstance and good booking and just putting more people on the show, more women on the show. Brandon, your thoughts on Kyle's question and maybe your response to some of the things that I just said afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that it would be fresh to have EO functioning outside of Damage Control. One of the biggest issues that they have on SmackDown, and I'm taking a look at the SmackDown roster right now, is that once you remove Damage Control from the equation and you assume that those three women are not going to face each other for obvious reasons, the pool from which to pull from is so incredibly small. I mean, Raw doesn't have that problem, at least anywhere near to the extent that SmackDown does. SmackDown is operating outside of Damage Control. They have Asuka, B-Fab, who is not currently being used on television, Bianca Belair, who just returned after a hiatus, Charlotte Flair, who is there right now, but it has very, very frequently been off TV, Isla Dawn, who again is not being used on television, although they did tease, you know, their re-debut tonight. Alba Fire, same thing with her, and they're also both in the tag team division, so you can sort of remove them from the equation. So that leaves Meechin, who is around weekly, you know, available weekly. Scarlett, who is not in a wrestling capacity. Tamina, who we haven't seen in several months. And Zelina Vega, who is featured regularly, but mostly in a managerial role, sometimes as a wrestler, but not taken particularly seriously. And Shotzi.
And she's an example of somebody you'd like to see three or four more versions of. So you could have a fresh kind of short-term thing where someone's
exactly
to the top. And it keeps everything else fresh as a result of that short-term rise from somebody who isn't quite ready to be a constant centerpiece. But WWE doesn't plan for that, or they try and it just doesn't work out. Like, you know, they attempted with Shotzi as the example I cited.
Right. So realistically, there are Shotzi, Zelina Vega. Let's count Tamina for the sake of having another body there. So you've got three, and then you've got four with Meechin. There's four women outside of the usual suspects that are available to them. I mean, so it's four women on the undercard. It's Charlotte Flair, Bianca Belair, and Asuka all kind of vying for that top spot. And then the three women in Damage Control. So what they're presenting right now is quite literally all they can present. Like, they don't have the talent on that brand right now to really switch things up. And they don't even have the talent to try to elevate one of those other women into position, because there's no one for them to get credible wins over without beating the only credible women in the division. So it's a really tough sell. And I think that's why you're feeling the repetitiveness and sort of the lack of variation in the women on SmackDown, because there just isn't anyone there.
And if you've got to get everything right, if that's what you're working with, you know, you've got to have Charlotte hot. You've got to have Io Sky despicable, or in a compelling storyline where she's hanging on by a thread to Bayley, but you can tell she wants to split. And they've teased that and then moved away from it, and they just don't seem committed. And you know, maybe Belair will add something, and that'll help. Kyle, back to you for any response to anything that Brandon and I just talked about.
Maybe now that Bianca, like you said, Bianca's out back, maybe they can probably do something with her, be a little bit an interesting character development for Bianca, to change her character and make her be a little bit interesting a bit for like a start. But yeah, it's just this rotation is going to be really weird, but hopefully they can get it together, because I think they've done a good job before. I think they can just got to go bounce back from it again, so hopefully they can do that. So I think now I'll just transition now to Logan Paul and Rey Mysterio. I thought that entire segment was interesting. It was kind of straightforward. It is now a match for Crown Jewel for Crown Jewel for the championship. It kind of reminded me of when Logan Paul faced his face with Ricochet in the summer. It's kind of similar to that. And I kind of enjoyed that. But in terms of Rey and Escobar, you sort of saw that theme backstage, but that's why he looked kind of pissed off and annoyed. What do you think that this heel turn is going to happen? And do you think United States Championship should be involved whenever they feud with each other, or they're just going to give it to Logan Paul if they decide to do that match? We think that entire segment with Escobar and Rey, and then Logan Paul and Rey, and then that segment with Rey and Mysterio, some of that.
Yeah. Glad to shift away from the women's division. I'm glad we gave some ample time to it, because it made event tonight, and I think it was worth it, but certainly other things happened here. Brandon, the timing of the Escobar breakup that we feel is inevitable with Rey, that it seems like probably would have happened by now based on original plans, and then they saw there were some detours to take that were worth extending things. What have you thought of the way they've told their story so far, and did you read into things tonight like Al did?
Yeah, a little bit. I think they're definitely leaning into at least teasing some issues in the ranks there with the LWO. I'm a little curious as to how soon they want to move forward with it, given the recent introduction of Carlito. It seems like Carlito is getting really strong reactions from the crowd, and I don't know that I want to see. I don't know how much interest there is going to be in like a Rey Mysterio and Carlito versus Santos Escobar type feud. And I don't know if that's the direction that they would go, or if it would be Rey just splitting up on his own, Carlito going heel. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously you can kind of assume that Rey Mysterio is the babyface in whatever scenario this plays out as. So I'm just trying to figure out where Carlito would slot in to all of that. I think he at this point is a more natural babyface. I also am not necessarily entirely sold on the idea of turning the members of Legado del Fantasma heel, because I think their in-ring style is far more conducive to being babyfaces. It also hasn't really been all that long since the group formed and since they turned the first time. So I'm fine with them teasing dissension in the ranks, but I sort of hope that they either continue to play it out over a very long period of time, or it just works out in the end, because I think this is good for them. I think that the Zelina Vega association, especially Zelina being associated with Rey, I think is good for her, and her association with Legado del Fantasma is good for everyone. I would just like to see them continue as is, at least for the foreseeable future. As far as the ongoing issue with Logan Paul, I thought the segment tonight was solid enough. I don't think that they did anything too crazy, but Logan held his own on the microphone. I thought some of it felt a little forced, a little bit, you know, scripted for him to come off as, hey, look at all the things I'm referencing. I'm really hip to the product, guys. Like, I know what's going on. So that was a little much. But beat for beat, I mean, he's got the cadence down. He sounds natural. He hits all the right points and the right beats. So thumbs up for that. I like the match, too. I think it's a good opponent for him. I think that Ray is going to work really well with him. And, you know, I think that Paul has proven enough that a secondary title on him is not the worst thing that could happen. The only issue that I would see with moving the U.S. Championship to Paul is you set up a second part-time champion on SmackDown. That is the one thing that would give me pause, unless they're going to go the route of putting the belt on him and getting him to commit for a month or two run where he's a full-time guy, and then he can drop the title on his way out.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to be referencing the U.S. title as the, you know, sort of the working man's title, like they frame the IC title, but certainly there's been streaks of the title being defended, and I think people take pride in that. There's perception people who hold it take pride in it, but that could be a source of heat, too. But it might get a little – it might backfire, you know, where fans are like, well, screw it. I'm not going to watch SmackDown until Logan loses. If he's not going to defend the title, I'll come back when the U.S. title's been defended again with somebody honorable. You want people to buy in that way who watch. So you have to be cognizant of the fact that you might pay a price if you tap into that emotion that people have when they have pride in a title and resent when it's, you know, being put on somebody who isn't going to defend it. I wonder if, I mean, just kind of tying everything together, there's a chance that Ray loses to Logan, but Escobar, I haven't thought this through enough, but like where there's Escobar does something to cause it, but there's plausible deniability.
Right.
And then something happens to Ray where then Escobar still is a babyface, but people are like, ends up beating Logan, although I don't know if you want Logan to lose to Escobar. That's another thing. If Logan wins, who do you spend a loss against with Logan? Because it feels like he shouldn't be losing to Escobar unless you're really committed to elevating Escobar afterwards with a subsequent heel turn. And again, I'm just kind of playing out a scenario where is there some way this all ties together where Escobar actually kind of reverses things on Ray and gets the title shot, the title rematch, and actually wins and then holds the title, but maybe doesn't give Ray the rematch that Ray deserves. I don't know. I mean, I could see somehow they weave a story where Logan's almost like this star player who's just sort of there as a conduit to get to the next chapter of Ray and Escobar.
Yeah, there is a story to be told. I say, you know, I made the case for keeping the LWO together long term, but I don't want to act like there isn't a story there and there isn't a way for them to get to Ray versus Escobar, because they've certainly planted seeds for quite a long time. And I do think what you raised, Wade, makes a lot of sense in that if Escobar somehow is the one to eventually take the title off of Logan Paul, there can be something there where he isn't, like you said, as quick to give Ray the rematch, because there is this sense that when Escobar was on the climb to become U.S. champion, Ray kind of swooped in and won it. Not in any way underhanded. It's just the way it happened to work out. But you could see that very, very easily that he could make the argument that the way that Ray did it was underhanded.
Kyle, back to you. Anything you want to say to what we've said or any new topic?
Well, maybe Carlito gets involved somehow, and too, because he's been involved as well, because I think also Carlito's kind of annoyed with Carlito getting involved, who, like, Ray's getting given his attention and also giving his attention with Dragon Lee as well. So maybe that's going to be – that will also Bert.
Yeah. Carlito could be the middleman who's trying to convince Ray that Escobar isn't on the up and up, but Ray actually distrusts Carlito more, and you get a little bit of like a Adam Cole strong MJF vibe or something. You know, that story can be told where the fans are like, I think Carlito's got a point, but I see why Ray doesn't believe him, but I'm not even sure if Carlito's not up to something instead of Escobar. I mean, lately I would trust WWE to tell that story, and I think those three people would be compelling because, I mean, Carlito and Rey and Escobar all come from different places and are sort of converging right now in a way where you could tell, interesting story that does involve Carlito, and I think it's actually important to include him in any speculation because in terms of what's going to happen with Rey and Escobar, because it seems like he's back for more than a nostalgia pop. It seems like he could be a significant player in steering things, and that is one way that I just brought up that might happen. They might just be more blunt force with it and have, you know, Escobar attack Carlito and Rey go, "What are you doing?" And Escobar's like, "I'll do what I want," and then he punches Rey. I mean, it could be straightforward too, but
yeah.
I'm not trusting anything Carlito says until he brings his old music back.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Okay, so the last thing that I'll mention was Jay being on SmackDown attacking Jimmy after what Jimmy did to him on Raw and all that stuff. It's like this is the one thing with the brand split doesn't really – well, I mean, it makes sense because they're going to probably beat each other at WrestleMania probably, so kind of makes sense in this situation. But wait, the whole – back and forth with Jay and Jimmy. You think it's the last time we'll see them interact with each other for a while until at least January. So what do you think about that scenario with Jay coming out and he's attacking Jimmy out of nowhere and everything that happened from the habit of Raw to Payback, stuff like that?
Kyle, I want to throw that to Brandon, but I want to add to it Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce. It's not just Jimmy and Jay, and I want Brandon to tell me what he thinks of Nick Aldis showing that as soon as he got power, maybe he's not going to be just a duplicate of Adam Pearce, who was this, you know, flustered middle management trying to do the right thing every week and dealing with chaos. Aldis might be have a little bit more of a strong hand, seem a little less easily intimidated or flustered, but he also is showing maybe some signs of not being a neutral, level-headed GM or type figure like Pearce has been for quite a while. I'm not judging that either way. I'm just throwing to you, Brian. I want to get your thoughts on that. Is that what you interpreted tonight?
So, I liked the logic with which they carried out the things that happened tonight. So, in other words, I liked the fact that security came after Jey Uso when he jumped the barricade and attacked his brother. What I don't like is that same logic didn't apply on Monday. So, and it might be okay, because what they might be going for is that Nick Aldis is running a tight ship and Adam Pearce is not. And if that's what they're going for and that's how they're going to present it, then I'm fine with that. But I want the rules to be applied evenly. So I want logic to dictate what these two brand managers would do. And if that's where they're going, if they had that same thought, then great. If they address it on Monday and now suddenly Adam is completely in line with the idea that if any guy from SmackDown shows up here, it's on. Security, pounce on them. I will find them. I will throw them out. Because that's what technically should happen under the guise of a brand split. The rosters are split. Yeah. If you are coming from SmackDown to Raw, you do not work there. You do not have the right to interfere. So if that's where they're going, great. If not, then I have an issue with the fallacy there of, you know, Jimmy being able to get involved illogically because it suits the finish that they want, and then Jay getting kicked out because it suited what they wanted to do on Friday. I hope that that's not the direction that they're going, and I think given the booking that we've seen recently, they deserve the benefit of the doubt before I, you know, judge that harshly. But As far as Aldis and Pearce go, I'm less inclined right now on this first example to think that Aldis is not acting as a neutral party, more so that he's acting in an aggressive way to protect the brand that he's managing. And so Aldis isn't necessarily making decisions that benefit heels over babyfaces yet. Instead, he's making decisions to protect his SmackDown assets because he wants SmackDown as a brand to survive, prosper, and conquer Raw.
So he's on our side. He wants a hard brand split, and I'm interpreting him going, Adam Pearson, Jay, get out of here. You don't belong here, as being heel because he wasn't Minnesota nice about it. But in reality, he just wants the clean split. What are you doing here, Adam Pearce? I'm the boss now. Get out. This is my territory. Give me a chance. Give me some breathing space. And Jay, hey, you don't get away with stuff here that you get away with there. What I think jumped out to me is Adam Pearce's react. First, Nick was blunt. I mean, he didn't coddle anybody. It didn't seem like I'm new. I know Adam Pearce. I'm going to respect your seniority here. So there's sort of that. Although, it fits Nick Aldis's personality. He's well cast in that way. Interviewed Nick. I've watched him, do his work in a lot of different contexts. And this is really in line with what you would expect him to be as a character. Anything else wouldn't feel true, wouldn't ring true. But then Pearce looks at him and goes, what was the phrase? Like, is this how it's going to be? Or is this how it starts? Or something like that. So it kind of got to what we speculated last week. Are we going to get a match between these two at some point? Or is this just a story of two middle managers handling things in a different way, and it's Survivor Series season, so we got
to
play that up.
Yeah, it felt to me like the first tease of Survivor Series, and in fact, I think Pierce even said "Let the games begin" or something like that, which was to me a pretty clear reference to War Games.
Pick our sides. Each GM picks their team,
right?
And we have this.
Yeah. So that was my fresh interpretation as it was going down, but I don't doubt for a second that it could very well be what you are alluding to, that Aldis is more likely to be the heel GM, Pearce is more likely to be the neutral or babyface GM, because that's historically what they've done. They've historically had a face GM and a heel GM. I don't like that necessarily, because then when you do get to Survivor Series season, it becomes this really weird dichotomy where you have baby faces on a brand fighting for a heel general manager who they normally don't get along with, but they're doing it just to beat the other guys in an arbitrary battle that doesn't matter.
Well, if all this tinges heel, and we can interpret it either way, there's no definitive evidence, but if he's going to be more heelish, he could just pick a heel team, and Pierce could pick more babyface team, and that actually solves that issue, because now it's not about brand supremacy. It's about Nick Aldis and these thugs or whatever, and Adam Pearce and these nice guys, and we get away from Raw versus SmackDown, pick your team color, because you should be pro-WWE. It's, everybody is pro the babyfaces, or should be pro babyfaces, anti-heels, if the bookers are doing their job and casting wrestlers in alignment with how fans will react. Then the brand stuff is silly, and maybe they found a way to get past that. This does feel like Nick, to me it feels like, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe Nick Aldis is going to be a wrestler by December, and he's going to lose his job because he, Triple H fires him. like, you got power hungry too quick, I didn't expect that, and Nick's like, I'll put the trunks on, I'll wrestle. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. It's like,
right.
You shouldn't assume we know for sure. But if he is a long-term GM, which is, I think, most people's assumption, then getting this quickly into things is fine if it's going to be a Survivor Series situation, him against Pierce, Raw, SmackDown. But you want to also know, where's he going to be after this?
Right.
And you don't want to just spend the Nick Aldis card and do this rushed hotshot booking with him. You got to have him have a landing place that serves SmackDown well going forward.
Mm-hmm. I will say one positive, and this is it's a small one, but
yeah.
If they are, in fact, going back to brand warfare, at least we won't be 3 weeks out from the draft this time.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes. Yes. All right, Kyle, any closing words from you?
So I think this is going to be, interesting to also how they're going to play out Survivor Series. Are they going to bring it back, War Games, if they are? How's that going to play out as well with the whole, are you going to do the whole, if saying, if Pearson, all to say that he could pick five guys from SmackDown, five guys from Raw to be in War Games. I don't know how that's going to work. I don't know if that's even going to be a thing. So I guess we'll just wait and see what happens. But I do, hopefully this will be the last time we'll see these two interact with each other for a while and have them separate until WrestleMania season. But that's it. Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle. Yeah, any different directions they could go with War Games or any preferences? Have you changed your mind from, oh, it's obviously this, to maybe it's going to be something completely different over the last month, Brandon?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there was obviously a really clear setup for it last year. I mean, they just had the obvious bloodline situation and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens staring them in the face. I think it's a lot less obvious this year. I mean, I don't, is Roman Reigns even advertised for Survivor Series?
I don't think so.
So it would probably be something outside of the bloodline if they're going to do it. I know that it's sort of WWE's tradition to introduce a stipulation to a specific pay-per-view and then attach it to it long-term. But I would just assume that Triple H, you know, in his booking wisdom, which I think over the course of the last year or so has proven to be pretty strong, that they just wouldn't do it if they didn't have the right matches for it. I don't want to see them water down the War Games match just because it's November. I would much rather see them build some traditional Survivor Series tags and do that.
I mean, I think they like the idea of being able to brag about big numbers on Peacock afterwards, and you know, Triple H, you know, has the affinity for War Games. It's not it's a WCW thing, I'm not going to do it, like Vince kind of had towards things like that. But yeah, it's the calendar gimmick matches don't work unless there's a really logical way to explain it. And if this just feels like, well, Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce got into it because of something Jay did independently of both of them, so therefore, how convenient, we're going to do War Games again. Like, it's sort of eye roll. How convenient.
Well, and Triple H has done a good job at moving away from that too. So it's all the more reason
to introduce a new one.
I mean, jumping Hell in a Cell and, you know, I mean, there's the thing is that you don't have to retire the War Games match. There will come a time in WWE's calendar, probably within the next 12 to 18 months, where a War Games match makes a lot of sense, and then they could just book it.
Yeah. All right. Our number, if you want to join the show, is 347-215, push 1 when you call, or email us, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's go to Sean in Murfreesboro next. Sean, welcome. Good to hear from you on a Friday night. What's up? What's on your mind?
Wayne, Brandon, it's always good to talk to you guys, man. You guys are two of the best. How y'all doing?
Hey. Good.
Kyle, he's awesome, but man, he took all the fun stuff. Like, Kyle, why'd you take all the fun stuff from me? Like, I had all this cool stuff, and like, you ruined. No, it was a good topic, and it was really good discussion. I enjoyed all of it. I guess going back to the Logan Ray segment, because I did enjoy it. I mean, Brandon, I think you're right. Logan did have a couple of like lines where you're like, yeah, it's kind of maybe a little much for me, but it was still, I enjoyed it. But I guess I'm kind of still with. I wanted to go back to first. I think even though it's a Saudi Arabia card, and like we've said over and over, it's not fun. I don't enjoy the shows. I'm like, I wish they wouldn't do them, but they're going to do them. It, you know, it is what it is. The card right now is shaping up to be really, really good. This is a good card. And I'm sad because it is a Saudi Arabia show, and I wish it was a Survivor Series or a Royal Rumble card and all this kind of good stuff. But going to the Logan Ray match, I think – have to win. I don't want Logan again winning the title. I think it'd be cool, but I don't think he needs it because again, he's a part-time guy. And I still think they could tell the story with title. And eventually, I still think Santos does need to turn because I think Santos is better as a heel. It doesn't need to happen like you guys were saying. I don't think it should happen right away, but I think over time, Santos should eventually turn, get frustrated with Ray for whatever reason he brings up. Hopefully, it's a good one. And eventually wins the title from Ray. I think it'll help Santos. It'll build him up a little bit. I mean, U.S. title, I think, is kind of where he should be right now. I don't know how much more higher he could go, but I think that's a good start for him. So what do you guys think about that? Because I think Santos has to go. I think there's an upside for him, and that right now is the best upside for him to have. What do you guys think about that scenario?
Just in general with Santos, I'm not sold on him being somebody worth spending big names losing to him on to be elevated into a top-tier heel or babyface. I like Dragon Lee better. I mean, there's a lot of people like better in WWE who I think, But I'm not, like, down on him as sort of a perennial, you know, second-tier guy who can give you good matches. He's got good facial expressions. I think he has some, you know, good natural tendencies. There's just something not quite there that makes me want to invest in him beyond. Like, I think he would be the secondary player against top-tier people and a main guy against other second-tier people who are there for him to beat to keep strong. So that's a kind of a broad, generic answer. Brandon, your thoughts?
I'm a little bit higher on him. I thought that the Legado del Fantasma stable was really cool, and I was upset that they sort of let it fall by the wayside rather quickly. I like what they've done in the LWO, and I think because the babyface turn is still relatively fresh, and because I think Zelina Vega is a strong babyface character and is easy to root for, that I like seeing her in that role. But I definitely understand the desire to play out this angle with Rey Mysterio. I mean, I'm cool with the idea of elevating Escobar and having him possibly be the one to beat Logan Paul if he were to win the U.S. title, or to just beat Rey for the title eventually. But they need to do a better job at putting a significant amount of focus on him. Escobar is kind of a guy who loses more often than he wins, even as a babyface, which is not typically what you see. He's typically the fall guy in like a tag team match with Rey Mysterio, or, you know, when he was challenging for the U.S. title against Austin Theory, he was the guy taking the falls until Rey eventually got the win. So I would need to see some more commitment to him before I said, yeah, definitely put the U.S. title on him. But I do view him a little bit higher. I think that there's a ceiling for him. I don't know that he could be a main event player or anything like that. But I think that, you know, as a strong workhorse champion, as a heel on SmackDown, I mean, I would like to see, you know, like a workhorse run with the U.S. title. And it just for what it's worth too, like I'd be all in on moving that U.S. title to Logan Paul if it were not on the same brand as Roman Reigns. I think, like I mentioned earlier, having the two absent champions presents a real problem for the singles division on SmackDown. If they had either Seth or Gunther with, you know, or it would be Seth because you'd have the world title. So if they had Seth the U.S. title there, I think you could easily get away with it.
Sean, back to you.
Yeah, I think I'm a little, you know, I'm higher on Santos, but yeah, I don't think he's a main event guy. But I think the U.S. title is at least a good, you know, a good start to see where he could go and kind of some of the stories they could tell with it. But
I don't think any of us are too far off from each other, even if we have, you know, nuanced differences in where he lands.
No, I agree. I wanted to hear, since you're talking about John Cena, Wade, number one, I want to hear your rant on it or your thoughts on it, but I'm definitely with you, though, because, you know, when they started doing him with the Bloodline here lately, it was like, okay, at least he's getting somewhat serious. Like, it's not serious, but it's better than what he was doing, because I'm with you. When he first came in, it was like, oh, my gosh, the fans are into him, which is cool. The fans are back into him again. Like, that's fine. He's getting good pops. They're not doing the, you know, Cena sucks, all that. Like, that's cool. But, yeah, tonight it was kind of just like, oh, man, John, like, don't. Yeah, like,
okay.
Whatever.
Okay.
What are you doing
here?
Let's just come for it.
All right. I can't wait any longer. I need to jump in. I'm just this. First of all, he comes to the ring, and it's not like this. It didn't come across to me as like a crazy wild response. And he's like, let everybody know what a wild group you are. And it's just so patronizing. It's just, he's just going through the motions, and then a bunch of gullible fans are like, John Cena, things were great. Let's cheer even louder. And, you know, so it's the same routine. It's just, you know, it's like Tony Khan promised telling everybody, should you be a pay-per-view city? And you guys are great. Well, actually, WWE is doing that now with WrestleMania. There's so much. It just feels disingenuous and going through the motions and yeah, kind of patronizing. But then the whole, oh, I got delivered some harsh news today. And I'm like, oh my God, does he have a disease? Did something happen with like one of his favorite charities where they said we're replacing you with, I don't even want to be silly about it. But it was like, it seemed like he was going to, you know, and I didn't, first of all, I didn't buy it for a second that anything serious happened because it's John Cena. But the way he sold it, the average person is like, oh no, what are we about to hear? This is, oh man. And he leans on the top rope. I'm going to share with you because you're my friends. 2002 days. That's how long it's been since. And I think since you got a physical and now you realize you should have gotten your annual physical. Like, what are you about to say? Since a singles win. It's like, right, because you've been making movies and TV series and you're older and you're in semi-retirement. And it was just like the framing of it was just too much for me. And there's so many – I mean, he just could have gone out there and just said, Roman's bragging about something. Well, I'm going to tell you about something I'm not proud of. I've been busy. I've been doing other things, but it's been too long. In fact, it's been 2002 days since I won a singles match. I want to correct that. He could have done that. But no. It makes us think he's got some terrible brain tumor or something. It's just settle down with a melodrama and stop treating us like – all the viewers like that. I just – so it was just and Cena's been like that. I mean, he's been like that in almost every promo he's done. And it's just – and I know people are cheering him more than ever, and I was a little bit more of a defender than some in terms of how he came across before because I thought it kind of served a purpose, and he was playing to the kids. But he's not playing to the kids. No, he's playing to this adult audience who grew up watching him. And he's just a goof, and he's melodramatic, and it's just too much for me. Brandon, what did you think watching this?
So I wasn't a fan of the promo tonight for a lot of the reasons that you already stated. I'm a little bit higher on the general idea that a lot of times in WWE, when you have a legacy act, they come through and they win because they're this big legacy character with a history behind them. Take The Undertaker, for example, who would disappear for months on end. He'd come back, he'd show up, he'd beat a guy who was beneath him but maybe on the rise, and sometimes it would hurt him. And Cena was that guy for a while. Cena would come in after some time off, he'd beat the guy that people liked, it would make people angry, and then he'd ride off into the sunset. Cena has been in a different position for a while now where he's been not wrestling very often. That's an important designation. And not having particularly important matches. But it is important to note that he loses all those matches. So I think that unlike a lot of times when you get the conversation started about whether or not a wrestler is past his sell-by date, usually those wrestlers are showing their age, but because this is a show business, they're still winning matches because they have a legacy to protect and the company is booking them to win matches, even if it doesn't look like they should. This plays out a little bit more like a real sports story, where John Cena is the guy coming back to recapture his glory days, except that he's not very good anymore. He can't get it done anymore. And I think you've seen that carry over into his, I'm going to call it a performance because he was certainly playing a character when he was sitting on the stand at the press conference after Fastlane, where he talked about the fact that he had a lot of work to do. He wasn't what he used to be. He needed, you know, some tune-ups. So I like that as a general presentation, but I think he's hamming it up way too much.
Yeah.
I don't think
hamming it up.
I don't think the announcers are presenting it that way as much as they should. I think there's just an over-reliance on leaning into the idea that the announcers are almost as much like the fans are in chanting, "You still got it." I mean, they're not like quite stepping up to that line, but they're getting pretty darn close. And I would much rather see them question just, hey, you know, John was the greatest of all time, but does he have it anymore? I mean, the greatest always falls off eventually.
And that was part of my issue too. I didn't get to it, but like teasing retirement also, it's just everything you said, I like. It is not, I'm not against like the sort of bullet points of John Cena and what he said. It's all about the way he went about it. He just can't find that right tone. That doesn't, and it's the same thing with his facial expressions, you know, in the background. He just, it's like, he's over the top. Everything is over the top. I think I'm going to retire. No, John, don't say that. But I'm not going to, because the best is yet to come. It's just, my God, can you have these wild swings? I got this terrible news. I haven't won in 6 years. Okay, that's not terrible news. Like, I mean, it's just
he was like, I mean, he was like on the verge of tears.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, yeah, his lip was quivering. Yeah. It was, yeah, it was just, it was way too much. And I think that the thing that's irked me the most about this run for John Cena, and we got an inadvertent peek behind the curtain during the Fastlane press conference. In addition to these corny promos and stuff, I think a lot of the reason these corny promos are happening is because they have no idea what to do with him. Because he is just – he's there every week, but he's only there until the strike is over. Now it isn't even even something that we can just pretend is the truth. He flat out admitted it.
Yep.
I mean, he said it during the press conference. So quite literally, he admitted – that if they had him in a multi-week major storyline and a deal was reached to end the strike, he would be gone right in the middle of it. And so that precludes them from doing anything of importance with him.
Which given – sorry, Sean, I'll throw to you after this. Given how hard he was on The Rock when Rock left, like in the middle of his career to go to Hollywood, like, I mean, I wouldn't be in favor of this in general. I'd be critical of Cena. For just, I mean, I give him credit for being upfront, but I mean, somebody can be upfront about the fact that they don't like short people, but it doesn't mean you give them credit for judging everybody who's short. They're still a jerk. So John Cena can be honest about it. Okay, you get a point for that. You're still a jerk for saying I'm only here because I don't something I'd rather be doing isn't available to me, and that's just sorry. You shouldn't be selling out tickets. Or you shouldn't be selling out buildings and everybody cheer you if it's your second choice. So I throw that out there, but the hypocrisy of being hard on Rock about it, and now he's doing the same thing. I mean, there's plenty of differences, and when Cena said that initially, I said just wait 10 years because he's going to change his tune. But there was something different about it back then. Rock didn't want to mention pro wrestling by name. He was trying to avoid it. He was, I'm Dwayne Johnson, not The Rock. Okay, that's fine. And then John Cena put in all these years of full time work, way more than The Rock. So there's that differences. Rock couldn't mention WWE because WWE was so damaged from a public image standpoint at that point. They were in such a different place than they are now. The LA Times would not have run an article about some match in Saudi Arabia as a PR conduit for them back then, because it was a scandalous company full of all kinds. I won't even get into it right now, but it was a different time, and Rock needed to separate himself in order to, in a way, pave the way for people to accept pro wrestlers and not think they're all what you saw in scandal-ridden tabloid stories. So there's a whole detailed nuance. I've gone into it many times. But so it's not open and closed. It's not open and shut. Oh, Rock was wrong, Cena was wrong, either way. But there is that sort of vibe of, really? Like, you're saying I'd rather be in Hollywood than here, but I'm going to come here as a consolation prize in my 40s and then play up retirement and I'm not that good anymore and I haven't won a long time. And then outright, as you say, Brandon, say, but I'm out of here as soon as I get something more interesting for me to do at this stage of my life. It's just on so many levels.
To his credit on that, I don't remember him saying, you know, I'd rather be there than here, you know, in any sort of direct ways.
Well, I mean, is there any other conclusion?
No, I don't think there is. But the way that he framed it, which I think at the end of the day is legitimate, is that he was right in the middle of shooting a film when the strike hit. And there is a massive insurance policy over his head. And he would be in breach of contract if he continued to wrestle or appear on a weekly basis and risk injury during the production of a film. Which I think is legitimate and perfectly good reason for him to take off and leave, but it puts WWE in this position of, yes, they're getting a lot out of John Cena in the sense of he's good publicity, he's good for ticket sales, but as far as a TV presentation, there's nothing. There is no meat, no substance.
No, those are all great points, and I think that's all fair and all true. You still, in the end, have John Cena who could do almost anything he wants with his life. And he's made clear he'd rather shoot movies than wrestle in WWE.
Sure.
And he was once mad at Rock for doing that. Again,
sure.
It's an overly simplistic framing of it. But my point is, it still stands that it's not a good look when he's like, come pay to see me. But it is made clear I'm out of here as soon as I have this other thing I'd rather mm-hmm. be doing. It pays me more. It's less physically toll. I don't even blame him. I'm just saying the reality is, let's be real. You at this stage would rather be having a success. I like him better outside of wrestling than in wrestling. I think he's more suited for the things he does out of wrestling now. I think he's been sort of over it for a while. He paid his dues. He put in his time. He sacrificed a ton. He deserves so much acclaim for the schedule he did and how he was instrumental in changing the image of pro wrestling because he was this friendly face at a time when wrestling needed a safe place for kids and families to go. I mean, all kinds of positive, but don't you hate the fact that right now, if you follow him closely, he is sort of a carpetbagger. He's the guy who runs for Senate because up until he was in college, you know, he lived somewhere and he hasn't been there for 40 years, but now I'm going to go back and represent you. There's a little bit of that vibe to it.
I'll never stop putting over John Cena as peacemaker.
Yeah. All right. So, Sean, those are my rants, you know, fair, unfair, overblown or not. I'm standing by him at the moment. I think he's hams it up too much and needs to dial it down and needs to respect the fan base in a way that he doesn't. And I don't think he means anything by it. I mean, I really don't think he looks down on the fans. I just think that's the mode he's in. And from what I've heard from people, I mean, Cena shows up and they're happy to have him. And no one's going to go, John, like there isn't that person to say, John, this what you're saying here isn't going to work. John walks in and he says, you know, kind of what have you got for me? And then he's done this for a long time, but especially on these returns, including that Austin Theory thing. He's like, how about I do this? How about I do this? And there's no one to go, that's a really, really counterproductive bad idea. Nobody will say that to him. And so I think he thinks he's doing good work and everyone's happy that he's there. And I think people are happy he's there, but I think people would rather steer him to do things in a different way. But who's going to walk up to Cena right now and go, dial it down, John?
Did you have a strong opinion on and I've probably heard it and just can't remember, but a strong opinion on his performance at Fastlane, because that was something that we talked a lot about on Wrestling Night in America, and we had both been really, really impressed. Nate and I were both really impressed with the way that match was worked. And I thought a lot of it was thanks in large part to Cena. I thought that, you know, he put over the bloodline in a big way by just selling just consistently for them and playing subsidiary to them, and then being the feeder for LA Knight and helping to
yes.
you know to help LA Knight look like a total star there.
It's actually underlines my point. I wish we could believe John Cena was sincere in other ways and didn't ham it up, because then the endorsement mm-hmm. of LA Knight I think would be more effective, because I do think he's, you know, he's trying with LA Knight mm-hmm. and he's putting LA Knight over in ways where he is, I don't know if subservient is the word, but sort of like it's your time, not mine. And, you know, I'm not, frankly, I frankly don't deserve a title shot, but I know someone who does. Now, that's not entirely connected to reality either, because LA Knight should probably put in a year of beating bigger names before he's headlining a PLE against Roman Reigns. But, you know, fans cheered him loudly, so he's moving up in line, and fans seem okay with it. I thought the match was formulaic and a little drawn out. But I thought it was, my conclusion was it was effective.
I thought it was basically a house show match.
Exactly.
That it worked really well for everybody involved.
Yeah, we're on the same page, though. Yeah, I mean, little drawn out, little formulaic, but it was effective. And, let's be clear. Saying that John Cena's hamming it up and overplaying a retirement announcement and making people think something terrible happened to him, and instead it's 2002 days of a singles win, that is a criticism that is much smaller than what many veterans of his age or experience level have done when they've come back after time away. I want to be sure that, like, not all criticisms are equal in condemnation. And I'm not condemning Cena for not wanting to do the right thing. I'm condemning him because he's John Cena and he's just dialing it up too much and having it up. And Frank, if he shows up and in good faith goes, hey, I want to say this about this guy and that'll fight, you know, Austin Theory, that'll fire him up. I know when Vince did it to me. I don't think he did that to bury him, but I also don't think it was in the top 10 ways that John Cena should have shared screen time with Theory. And there's just nobody there who has that relationship with Cena to go, let me tell you why I think this is a bad idea. And John's like, hey, I'm all ears. This is just an idea I had. I'm all ears. And then someone says, instead, how about we do this and this? Because what you're saying isn't going to really work based on what Theory's been doing. You've been busy making movies you don't know and what we want to do with in the future, which you're not privy to, but let me tell you. And then John's like, oh, yeah, that promo would have been terrible. Thank you for telling me that. There's nobody there to do that. So Cena's showing up with good ideas, but I was, you know, flat out told there's no one there who just goes, John, I know you put thought into this, but we kind of want to tear that up and do something completely different. And so, but you're, Brian, I'm glad you brought that up because this isn't like a veteran showing in and burying people or stealing a spotlight. He genuinely does seem to want to be passing the torch. It's just a little too cloying and maudlin and all the things that John, you know, hamming it up, all the things that John Cena usually is. But credit to him for having, I think it's hard at the right place for sure. Sean, back to you.
Wow. I'm going to try to say what I can. I don't want to go too long, but you guys put a lot in there, and I appreciate it. I just want to try to get as much of my piece in as I can. So going back to Cena, because I have my thoughts on it. Okay, 10 years ago, I was a fan. I liked him, you know, more than most people. I liked what he did. I liked the sympathetic figure he was against bigger opponents. I liked a lot of that. For me, when he came in against Theory, I was like, okay, I know he's not going to be here for a while, but I want to give him a chance because I've always liked Cena. Austin Theory to me is it still an up-and-coming guy, and I wanted to bring that up here in a little bit. But that match, I was really excited about what they were going to do there. And Wade, I'm with you. I thought it wasn't what it could have been. I thought Cena should have been more serious in that sense of if I'm going to try to put these guys over, I want to have a workout, get in best shape as I can for a match, have the best match that I can, whether it's the greatest match ever, it's not going to be, but the best match it can. It wasn't a very good match. Yeah, Theory won, but it hasn't really helped him yet. I think it will. And then the match you talked about at Fastlane, I thought it was good too, but Cena just oversold. It was just ridiculous the way he was selling. It was just over. It was too like, oh, I'm like going to die. Like, help me. You know, it's just like, I don't know. It was good. I mean, he sold for him the way he should have because he's trying to get LA Knight over, and it's fine. But it's just like you said, the overacting and the over like dramatic, and it's just to me it's too much. And so yeah, Wade, I think I'm ultimately where you are. I'm over it. I'm like I like you. You had a great WWE career. It was fantastic, but it's just kind of move on. You know, stop the over dramaticness, and that's what it kind of boiled down to tonight. It was like, okay, you're drawing this out way too much. And Jay and Jimmy, thank God, saved it. That's what happened. They saved the segment because other than that, it would have been awful. That's my thing on Cena. Going back to the tag team match with Theory and Waller, I know it's still early and, you know, there's a lot going on with Theory and Waller and they're both – I like both their upsides, but I think this tag team so far is, you know, doing okay. Like, they have good chemistry. I think their chemistry is pretty good. I mean, they seem to like working with each other even though they're both kind of the same person, but they make it work pretty well. We know where Grimes is. He just kind of is what he is, unfortunately. But what do you think about those two together, where they might go? And then going back to Dragon Lee, because I didn't get to see him a ton before he came to WWE, to NXT. Where do you think his upside is? Because I do like what I've seen from Dragon Lee so far as well.
Brandon, I'll throw you first on those.
Yeah, with Dragon Lee, I'm not sure yet. I think it's kind of hard to say. I mean, we've seen a lot of masked, you know, the masked luchador type style come through WWE over time, and it seems like most of them have failed to take off in any long-term sustainable way, with the exception of course, Rey Mysterio. So I like the potential of Dragon Lee a lot. I like what I've seen. But I think the jury's going to be out for a little while. I want to see – we've never had one of these characters come in fresh and seen them booked entirely through the eyes of Triple H or Paul Levesque. So I'm really curious to see how he handles him. Obviously, you know, he sees something there. Is he fully elevated to the main roster at this point, or are we assuming that?
I don't know, honestly. I think so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think there's been an official declaration. I mean, he might be on a trial period, and they don't know, but it seems like it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm curious. I'm hopeful. I mean, SmackDown in particular could really use a babyface at that level and one that is sort of ready to ascend to the next level at any given time. And so I think that could be really good for that brand to have someone who you can slot into that middle of the mid card for a bit and then hope that he catches fire in a way that allows you to elevate him with some swiftness. So I'm hoping that that's the case for him. I think that the potential is certainly there, but the history of WWE booking those characters well is not. So I've got to see it under new management before I really get committed to getting my hopes up. Second part, Sean, remind me again, you're asking about the Theory and Grayson partnership.
Yeah, just them together, what you thought so far and where they could go. Yeah.
At first I thought that it was – Let me say, I still think it's the right move, but I was a little bit higher on it in the beginning than I am right now. And I say that because I feel like in the last few weeks, since they've rolled into being presented more as a straight up tag team and less as Grayson Waller being Theory's hype man, they've leaned into like the slapstick, we're two jacked guys comedy act a little bit. And I would rather see them play it a little bit more serious and straight than they are, but I'm not saying that it can't be something. I think that Theory is probably better served getting a reset at this point in a tag team like that. Grayson Waller could certainly use someone at his side who has been an established character on the main roster for a while. And they can hopefully rack up some wins in that tag division and then eventually be credible challengers for the tag team titles. I think it'll serve them both in the long run, even if it's not a super long-term partnership.
Yeah, to me, I think they see it as like cake and ice cream or burger and fries. And I think it's a little bit more French fries and tater tots on the same plate or side salad and coleslaw with nothing else. Like, it's just two things that are too similar and not complementary.
Yeah.
And so that's been – so I've been waiting for them to show me it's not that, and they haven't. I don't think it's a disaster. I mean, it's fine, but it does. It just feels like, yeah, here's French fries and here's French fries and tater tots. It's like, yeah, but there's nothing complimentary here. They're just two slight variations of the same thing. So I'm not like pushing heavily against that. I don't think I've ever like written or commented like these two shouldn't be together. It's redundant and it doesn't serve them well. But it's sort of my thought that I'm waiting for them to prove me wrong on that, and they haven't yet, but it's not so awful that I feel like I need to, take a strong stand. So that's kind of where I am. I mean, Waller's talented, Theory's talented. They both, I think, have bright futures. They might be different. I think Waller is more likely to succeed at a role that isn't top tier and not get a chance to be top tier. And Theory is more likely to get a chance at top tier, but also more likely to come up short in the role that they foresee him having, but he'll be given that chance. And I'm not even down on Theory's chances. I just think Waller is a shoe-in to be successful as, whatever he is. That is, you're not going to put him in pay-per-view main events. But with Theory, I think, they think 3, 4, 5 years from now, he's going to be a top six guy for them, pretty perennially as a face or a heel in main events. Or at least that's what they have him penciled in at. But they would love for 9 people to come in and knock him down because – not because he has failed, but because they have so many other better choices. But that's the path he's on. And right now it's a bit of a holding pattern with Waller, but maybe a growth period too, playing off of him. Sean, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, the first kind of was a comment. Just going back, because you brought up all the stuff with the women, I won't rehash that. As far as the match, there were a couple of cool spots in the match that I liked that were different that I hadn't really seen before. So that was, cool. But just all the stuff that you said, the interference is terrible. All the stuff of the women's division is terrible. But what I don't like, and I think, Brandon, I think you brought it up, was when Io used the belt and Cole says, and I like Cole, but he's like, oh, I give Io credit. Whoa, for what? You give her credit for using the belt. It's not a good thing to do that. It's not. I hate when WWE does that. I hate it. And I love Michael Cole. Again, Wade, I'm with you. He's been fantastic. But you give the heels a chance to get heat. That's not going to give them heat by saying, I give them credit for doing that. That's, oh, awful. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. That's all I have to say about that. You can talk about it afterwards. But I wanted to ask you the last quick thing. I just want to hear what you guys thought about the KO interview with Kathy. It was fine.
Oh, yeah.
It was basic, but I liked it because they talked about how you feel about getting away from Sammy, and he talked about that in depth, which I like that. And he said, I want to, punch people in the face, which that's what he's been doing lately, and that's his character, and it was cool. It was fine. Not really a lot of details yet, but we'll see when he gets on the show, like what he's going to do. But I want to hear what you guys thought about the interview overall and where he might be going. And I appreciate you guys for all you do, and thank you for taking my call, as always.
Thanks, Sean. Great talking to you, as always.
Yeah.
I thought it was fine. I thought, you can't not have – I mean, you can, but you ought not have Kevin Owens not comment on being separated from Sammy, because Sammy's make – they're so intertwined, and now he got sent to SmackDown. You want to hear what he thinks about it, what he thinks about not having Sammy around anymore. Addressing the tag title rematch, not getting that. And then throwing some names out that he wants to wrestle. And I think it's nice saying, hey, I've never had a one-on-one with Mysterio, and that needs to happen. And I want to have a match with Sheamus. So he wants to have, sort of some honorable matches, which maybe he'd do them honorably, maybe not. But, it's a way to put over, hey, I got things to do here that are fresh. Don't think I'm, that I'm not excited to be here. There's some positives. And then, there's some people whose faces I want to punch. And then he just did a little comedy bit with Jackie Redmond. Who do you want to punch? Oh, I can't do it. I'm a journalist. Ha ha. It was fine. Yeah. I thought it served its purpose fine. It fits the tone of the show, the vibe of the show, which is everything was just sort of, not reheated pizza, but I don't know, just sort of like it was there and it served enough of a purpose, but it wasn't like anyone's going to be texting their friends going, boy, did you watch SmackDown last night? You see that Kevin Owens promo? And not that everything should, it's fine to have maintenance segments, maintenance matches, but this was a show full of them. Mm-hmm. And then I had Logan Paul was fine, and that he's a guest. He was a novelty guest star. So that was one of the highlights. And then they had Bianca running it at the end, and that added, it changed a little bit of me being down on the show. It's like, all right, at least we got something newsworthy there. And then I had my issues with Cena. But they had the things that they thought were, newsworthy and important. But Kevin Owens was just sort of there like other things on the show. Even the Heyman promo, it was a good performance from Heyman. LA Knight should be out there with someone who can help carry him through those segments. But it wasn't blockbuster. We can get into it, but it's frankly LA Knight leaning in on catchphrases too much. I thought we're going to have him peel, we're going to see him peel some layers away and show some dimension to who he is. And we didn't really get it tonight. It was just him making Paul Heyman, cower after being cocky. It's just fine. And the show was fine, but the KO promo, going back to that, it was fine. Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, it was fine. I'm interested to see when and because I don't presume that this was done without taking this significantly into consideration. I don't think it was done by accident. At some point, you would think it has to come up from Kevin, from Sammy, in a pretty significant way. I mean, Sammy did allude to it on Monday, but it didn't really lead anywhere. Jey Uso is the reason that KO and Sammy are broken up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, Cody is.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just being. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they both are technically, if you want to. If you want to get technical.
Jay just got a text going, you're going to Raw. Cody's the one who orchestrated it.
Right.
I don't mean to undercut your point because, yes, Jay's presence on Raw is what.
Right.
Yeah.
And if Jay hadn't quit SmackDown, then we wouldn't, we wouldn't be having the conversation anyway.
Right, that's true, yeah.
So Kevin, who was so adamant about not trusting Jey Uso, and then he finally does. He finally gives in. They embrace, and it's this big happy moment. And then right after that, he gets sent to SmackDown on the back of something that is directly related to Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso. So you would think at some point that's going to come up again, that that KO finally let his guard down, finally trusted these guys, and then even if it wasn't an intended consequence, their actions directly contributed to him being split from Sami Zayn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sami's already made mention of it, but Sami can very easily forgive and forget. I mean, you kind of already saw it happen on Monday. So his side is more or less covered. But we haven't heard Kevin's thought on that yet, and I can't imagine that he is just going to let that go. So I'm interested to see how that manifests. As far as his presence on SmackDown in general, I think there are some intriguing matchups there, but it seems pretty limiting to me overall. I mean, we've seen Kevin against the Bloodline ad nauseum, and there really isn't anything else at the top of the card except for the Bloodline. So short of him turning heel, I mean, yeah, he can work with – he can work one-off matches with the likes of Rey Mysterio and with Sheamus. But, I mean, who else is there really at the top of the card there for him other than, say, like LA Knight when he's done with the Bloodline? I mean, you can throw out John Cena, but he's not going to be around long term. So there just doesn't seem like
Escobar,
there's
Escobar, Carlito turn heel.
Yeah,
I mean, it just there. Yeah, I mean, even I mean, I don't know how many people are saying I got to see Sheamus and KO. I mean, it'd be
right,
cool to have a
right.
You know a bucket list match. You know, Edge got that, but I mean, it doesn't really take full advantage of what KO still could be, or
right.
It's a continuation of him not being as utilized as well as he might have been if
mm-hmm.
Triple H and not Vince McMahon was in charge of him early on or something. I don't know. Yeah. By the way, LA Knight, what'd you think of his interaction with Paul Heyman?
I thought it was good. I mean, I thought it was good enough to carry the feud forward another week without Roman there. I would like to see, like you said, a little bit more meat out of these promos from LA Knight. I'd like to see him expand a little bit more on the character. But man, do people love the whole thing? I mean, they're eating out of the palm of his hand. So does that run out? I mean, will the bloom fall off the rose? I mean, you would think eventually if he doesn't expand upon things, but so far there's just been no indication that that's coming. I mean, they're all in. I thought that Heyman, for as little as he actually said in the way of meaningful words, he was great in you know, his fear of Knight, of getting physical, and just his general presence, him trying to leave the ring multiple times, Knight pulling him back in. I thought it was all really, really good. I mean, he worked really well.
We're all the same,
well.
Except I dress better than you and I have more money. I mean, that's such a great heel line. That's such a great heel line. And then the fact that he acts like he's, you know, LA Knight's biggest fan messing with his head is good. I want to read what Alex McDonald wrote in his report at pwtorch.com, because we got two SmackDown reports on most Fridays, mine and Alex's, so it's kind of fun to see what we pick up on, and he'll pick up on things I miss and analyze things. And sometimes have a different opinion, sometimes just pick up on things I did. But we were kind of in sync on this, and this is what he wrote. I get it's a solid segment. I get that it's Knight's shtick, but he relies really heavily on the catchphrases to get through some of these promos. I've wrote similar things in my analysis. It works for him, and that's great. But I hope he brings more next week when he's face to face with Roman Reigns. I think that's where some of the danger with Knight comes in. WWE's done such a great job making their characters multidimensional, and Knight isn't right now. I'm willing to give him a chance, and I'm glad that they're striking while the iron is hot. But I'm starting to understand more and more why WWE thinks this could just be a fad. I'm interested to see what they do with Knight in the next 2 weeks, and then what happens in the aftermath. I'm just agree with all that. Like, that's the concern with Knight. And I wrote in my analysis on my written report at PW Torch, I said, you know, I think with LA Knight, WWE's cognizant of the fact that there might not be a lot of depth here that they can work with, and they might not really want to invest in that at this point because they are rushing him to a PLE main event before he has a track record from a athletic qualifying standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't really earned this match. He just got cheered and then said, it's, you know, whatever his equivalent of it's my time is, you know, with you know, and what is this phrase? I'm just like, I quoted my report. Not it's my time.
Well, it's his, my game.
Yeah. It's so similar.
It's LA Knight's game.
There we go.
Yeah, whose game is it? It's mine. So
yeah.
It's my time. It's my game. Yeah, no wonder. So I do think the WWE's like, we hope he lasts. We want him to be the next breakout star. We want to make money with him for 3-4 years. But we are highly skeptical. He has that in him. But we are not going to be stubborn and not admit we ought to wedge him into a match that will then save us having to put something that doesn't make sense or fans aren't into in the meantime. So we'll rush him into it and we'll make some money. And then we'll see if it made him more popular and he really shines and surprises us, then great. If he doesn't, well, hey, we gave the fans what they wanted and he got a match, a pay-per-view match, and we'll find something important, but not as important for him to do next. And I think that's fine. And I think that's what we're getting. And I don't think the ending has been written yet, but I don't think management's been surprised. I think they felt a little validated that what Alex wrote is true. They see him as a little more, leaning on catchphrases, and there's not a lot there. He's not great in the ring, and his promos are they're not nuanced. But if they can stretch it into something more, they're going to be looking. I mean, they want to make money. They don't have anything against him. Like, they've acknowledged that, his reputation is, he kind of throws people off backstage, but he's just a nice guy. He's just a little socially awkward. It's not like there's some people who are aloof and they're not nice guys. That's not LA Knight. He just runs, people get the wrong impression early on with him, and that has worked against him. Yeah, go ahead, Brandon.
So this is a little anecdote that I can provide to the popularity or lack thereof of LA Knight from the not target demographic, but it is I thought a funny little story, so I'll tell it. I will frequently when I'm watching wrestling in the living room, my girlfriend will be on the couch beside me and she'll be reading. And she is part of a few book clubs that her and some friends and also some people that she's met, through other friends.
How can she
online
concentrate with Pat McAfee?
I'm not sure.
Doing his thing
yelling
at Michael Cole.
I can be watching anything and she can concentrate. She does it during football too. It doesn't even faze her in the slightest. But she will occasionally look up from her book and comment on something that she sees. And lately, in the last few weeks, it has been LA Knight. And the comments are not good. The word that she uses is the way that he says, yeah, gives me the ick. So that started a couple weeks ago. And then last week, she showed me on her phone a part of a group chat that she's in with some of these other women who are in this book club with her. And one of them shared a picture on Friday night, and it was of her sitting on her couch reading while her husband happened to be watching SmackDown. And she sent it to the group chat, and my girlfriend happened to say, I'm in the same boat. I'm often sitting here reading while my boyfriend watches SmackDown. And the other girl, completely unprompted, said, it really annoys me, but nothing is worse than that LA Knight guy.
Wow. That is an interesting anecdote, and it can be the sign, and it can be an ominous sign. I don't know quite what it's a sign of, but it doesn't seem good.
And I asked her. So I asked my girlfriend tonight, actually.
Yeah.
She's been present for this entire run that Roman Reigns has had. And often she's been terribly annoyed at the idea that he calls himself the head of the table, that that all of his catchphrases, she thinks he's arrogant and annoying, and all of these things. And she's constantly asking, when is Roman Reigns going to lose the championship? And after a big pay-per-view or premium live event, she'll say, let me guess, Roman Reigns won. And I always say, yes, of course, Roman Reigns won. So tonight, she was in the living room reading her book while I was watching SmackDown, getting ready for this show. And she happened to look up and see on the screen that LA Knight was wrestling Roman Reigns at Crown Jewel. So I looked at her and I said, who do you want to win? It's your two favorite people. And she said, ugh, Roman Reigns, definitely Roman Reigns.
Interesting. Interesting. I love it. Brandon, anything else from tonight's SmackDown that you want to bring up before we sign off here tonight?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered everything.
I'm pretty deadly. They had a little vignette.
Yeah, I didn't care for that. I mean, nothing against Pretty Deadly. I just thought that the thing, it was just hokey. I just didn't think.
I just don't think it's a good look that Butch and Ridge are following them around
right.
to see if they go on a spa and attack them. It was just,
And doing like the shaky cam when they're throwing the forearms. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Well, Brandon, great talking with you. We had some good, I think some good discussions about some key things going on the SmackDown brand right now. So I enjoyed it. And thanks to our callers. For that, we will wrap up there. And, we'll talk to you next time, Brandon.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Thanks, everybody.